Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM,
The Fan.
Sports Radio 66, WFAN.
So now you've chosen expedient, instead of the expedient route, which you have taken many times in the past, you're telling us you're now going to bite the bullet and rebuild this franchise?
You're right. We're going with the young players. I've heard you guys talk about some of the young players we got up. I'm finding it exciting. I had a bank president tell me the other day that now people are wanting tickets. For months, they hadn't wanted any last year and early this year. Now he's getting calls for tickets. And I guess the Lyritzes and the Mills, I love the way Mills goes out to the mound. I love the way he comes off the mound. He's a young kid, but he's showing a lot of guts, and he's going to be a great closer for us someday. I like the play of a lot of the young players that have come up here.
George, forgive me, but I have trouble believing that you're going to be happy with a 70-92 team despite how good these young ballplayers are going to be.
Well, I'll tell you, I can understand why you say that, and you got a good case. I mean, it's hard to argue that I've ever been satisfied with less than winning before. But I am convinced now with what I have seen down there, where Columbus is leading by six games, where we won four championships last year, where these young fellas, Pete Peterson's been down there a week now. He came back. I just said, how'd it look? And he put up five fingers.
Okay, that was the voice of George Steinbrenner, the late George Steinbrenner, with Mike and the Mad Dog. That year, by the way, was 1990. It didn't exactly work out that way, but the way George thought. But, you know, the Lyritzes, or he called them the Lyritzes, and Alan Mills, who was a pretty, whatever. But we're going to talk about those years with someone who's been there as long as I have. From 1987 is when I met Joel Sherman. Joel Sherman of the New York Post and MLB Network. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Susan. I hate when you say those days because I don't know how it makes you feel, but like we could show an IMAX movie on my forehead at this point with my hair receding, so it just makes me feel.
Well, I haven't got any hair receding, but it is a long time. And you know, sometimes to me, and I just said this to Buck Showalter, it's great to keep these stories going, and you know, just hearing his voice and hearing the passion just makes me laugh. And we've all been on the other side of those screaming matches too. But I want to get you because you had some buttes. You must have met him. When did you realize that you don't do anything as a writer from the New York Yankees if you don't get to talk to George Steinbrenner?
Well, it happened so strangely when I started working at the Post in February 1989. It was the first time we had ever gone to a Sunday paper. I was brought in to be the investigative sports reporter for essentially the Sunday paper, but for all time. And on my second day of work, Michael Kay left for the Daily News. My third day, they asked if I wanted to do the Yankees. Instead, my fourth day, the sports editor was fired. That was my first roller coaster week at the Post. It's been 31 years of roller coaster. But I started talking to George really as an investigative reporter early on because him and Dave Winfield were suing and counter-suing each other. And I would call him, and I mean, you know, there was this incredible interviewing style that George had. He was on the record. He was off the record. He was all over the place. He was talking about a third thing. You know, he was making the most outrageous claims you could imagine. And like, this is my introduction to George, and I'm trying to keep up. And I'm like having, you know, like you're a young reporter, you're having to say, George, like, are you on? Are you off the record here? Are you kind of bouncing back and forth? And he's like, come on, keep up, you know, and he's yelling at you. And it was like, that was my first experience dealing with him, was literally with the Dave Winfield stuff.
Well, you know, so you're talking about 1989, and that was the year Dallas Green had started. And I was talking to Ron Guidry the other night, and he was talking about, you know, when 1989 started, Dallas Green really didn't like the old guys around. He wanted them all to leave, Guidry and Tommy John. And it was funny because it turned out Tommy John was the opening day pitcher. But George had kind of a love-hate relationship with Dallas right from the beginning. You could really see it because these two really strong, opinionated men were just going to clash heads. You knew it from the first time you met them both together.
Yeah. So Susan, I did a series a couple of months ago about the 1990 Yankees. And one of the things that reminded me of many things, but one of the things it reminded me of is ball players and managers and owners used to talk to reporters in a way they just don't anymore.
Right.
And I know you know this well. It's like you had to be on constant call to George at American Ship. I still can tell you what the phone number was. I won't give it out on the air because I don't know who it belongs to anymore. But it began 813-281, and I know the last four. And, like, you know, Dallas Green started, like, calling him Manager George in about, like, June or July that year, every time George would intercede on something. I mean, can you imagine Aaron Boone, you know, or any of the managers you've covered, Joe Girardi recently, suddenly calling the owner of the team Manager George, or, by the way, the owner managing the team from, a 1,000 miles away in Florida? I mean, that was what was – I mean, it's hard for people who – weren't around for George, who think they know what it was or think they understand who he was. You know, I remember, and you'll remember the name, like David Sussman was the general counsel for the Yankees. And he once described George to me as a force of nature. And he said, unless you're here every day and you see like that you could almost feel him before he shows up. There's a certain kind of like tension, anticipation, like that. What a force of nature he was. It was just like covering nobody else I've covered in 30 odd years of covering sports in general and baseball in specific the last 31 years.
Well, here's the thing that was amazing, and people don't forget, people, there were no cell phones. You had, you couldn't leave, there were no, you know, pagers, whatever. There was nothing. So if George would, he would never not call you back. You could call him at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you'd get one of two secretaries on the phone. You'd leave your number, and what is this about? And I always went, he'll know. And you couldn't leave. But if he wanted to talk to you, you'd get a call back within an hour or so. If he didn't want to talk to you, he would call at a time when he knew you were at the park. Like at 5:30, I'd come home and my answering machine, that big thing that sat on the desk, remember back then, it would say, it's George, I'm calling you back. Slam. And that's right. But so he always called you back. He never ignored you. But if he didn't want to talk to you, he'd call when he knew you weren't there. It was like, it was so frustrating. You didn't know what to do. And I remember the stories of Lou Piniella, not, you know, you couldn't go anywhere. You stay in your room until I call you. And they all did because you couldn't go out. There were no pagers. There's no nothing. You sat there and waited for him to call.
Yep. You couldn't like make the run to say like, go get coffee. If you were in the hotel on the road, you're covering the team. You're on the road over 100 days a year. A lot of those days you called George at America. Like I remember days being on the West Coast and having an alarm clock for 5:55 in the morning. So that at 9 a.m. East Coast time, I would have the first call into George because something had happened on the West Coast the night before. And you had to get his reaction to it. And, you know, it was just the reality. And you summed it up perfectly, Susan, like how many times I came back to the hotel room and the red light was flashing because it was George's way of saying the hell with you. I didn't like something you had written. But I called back, at a point where I knew you'd be at the ballpark.
That's exactly what he would do. And you know, and George was, I always call him mercurial. And you never knew what was going to get him mad. You never knew. And it would come out of nowhere. And I tell this story, Joel, all the time. And I'm going to ask you about the ice cream, the thing that you said when George took the liquor off the plane. He used to, I'd say something on WFAN, and I'd... I think, oh, my God, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, George, he's going to kill me. He's never going to talk to me again. Nothing. Nothing. I must have ripped somebody or said this team is stink, whatever. And one day we're in Seattle, and I said something about the bus being late. I mean, just sort of a throwaway line. He called me and reamed me out. Don't you ever tell anybody about our private things. You're cut off. Slam. And, of course, no cell phones. It was, and you heard the slam. And then, you know, took a couple of days, things were. But when we were on a losing streak, Joel, it was 89, because Dallas was still there, and George took the liquor off the plane, and you called him, and I remember him screaming, because you said something about, now, George, if you have chocolate ice cream, and you only have, do you remember what story I'm talking about?
I don't remember this story. You know, I was never on the team plane, so, like, I'm sure that players, you know, you take the alcohol off the team plane. I'm sure the players were crazed about it, but I don't remember it. But I do remember, like, that he had a bizarre nature for what would set him off and what the punishment would be. Like you're mentioning the bus. It's just sometimes these little things. You know what a, like, incredible meat freak he was. He'd see a candy wrapper on the field in spring training, and, you know, the wind's blowing around. You know, how would there not be a candy wrapper on the field? And he'd very fastidiously go and pick it up. And then, like, the next thing you'd hear is, like, he just made that guy show up every day at 6 o'clock in the morning who's responsible for the field. And you'd be like, what? Yeah, but it was stuff like that, and it, you know, there was a real meanness and an ability to really be relentlessly mean when he wanted to be mean.
Well, it was a streak, but it changed on a dime. It absolutely changed on a dime, and that was what I always say about George. You knew that you were a piece in the puzzle. Except we didn't know what the picture was. Only George knew what the picture was.
Well, so the thing I used to say about covering the Yankees, Susan, and it was interesting when you mentioned Buck. When Buck and Skip came, there was, you know, some of it covered the 2.5 years George was suspended, but there was a more logical, not totally logical, flow of how the Yankees made decisions. I used to say, like, when you covered the Yankees under George Steinbrenner, I was like, oh, they need a starting pitcher. They have four DHs. What'd they do? Oh, they got Ken Phelps. You're like, well, how'd that happen? Like, 2 plus 2, it not only didn't equal 4 with the Yankees on a lot of days, it didn't even equal a number. But, like, 2 plus 2 was a ham sandwich. There was a kind of craze about a lot of the day-to-day existence of the team. And in a way, his blessing was like one of the worst days of his life. He got suspended, but Stick and Buck came in, and they kind of cleaned up the team. And so when George came back, I mean, I think it's forgotten to time, Susan. You know, the Yankee Stadium crowd cheered the night George was suspended because they were happy he had been suspended. And then they came back. When he came back, they were on the brink of a dynasty, and he got kind of cleaned up by the dynasty, you know? And it in some ways, the worst thing that happened to him was the best thing that happened to him.
And one of the things that he always said after that was that Stick and Buck, they did it the Yankee way. And Buck was talking about that. I don't know if you heard him. He was just talking about, and George really believed in that way. And it was very fastidious in certain ways, certain way to wear your hair and a certain way to do the socks and all those things. Now, the rolled up socks, I asked him once, because he always had the minor leagues had to wear the pants to the knee and have the socks up, you know, the high socks. And George said, because that's what we do in the minor leagues. When they get to the major leagues, they can do whatever they want. But I thought that was really interesting. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you know, again, the things that really matter to George, and look, the family still carries a lot of it on, Susan, right? I don't know that how much longer you're going to be able to tell players about length of hair and facial hair and earring, and things that are important, maybe more important than ever to players today. And I just don't see the rule in baseball the Yankees, or in the country the Yankees, will be able to stand on, you know, besides tradition. If we're used to the tradition, right? Is
right.
Jason Giambi came in and cut his hair. Johnny Damon came in and cut his beard and hair. Like, I don't know how much longer that was, but it was something that mattered to the owner of the team a great deal. And so now, historically, it matters to his son.
Well, here's the other thing. I remember when Jason Giambi, when I started at Yes in 2003, I guess it was, when Giambi came in as star of the game, Giambi had, workout shirt and the tattoos on his arms. And George had a clubhouse kid come in the middle of the interview and make him put a jersey on. He said, "I don't want children seeing those tattoos on your arms." And Jason took it and put it on, and we kept going. But it was those kinds of things. And I remember when... somebody new came over and complained about, because the Yankees always wore suits and ties on the planes. And I remember George always said, because this is the New York Yankees. You're nobody else. You're the New York Yankees. Those things mattered to him. I do remember, though, there is one thing Don Mattingly said. We were on the road, Joel, and George was suspended in the team wasn't really good. Oh, gosh. It was not good. And something had happened in Anaheim, and Donnie started saying, you can say what you want about Mr. Steinbrenner, but at least when he was, and he makes wrong decisions sometimes, but at least when he was here, you knew that he cared and he wanted to win, even if it wasn't always the right way.
Right. And look, I it's strange, of course, because he's been gone now, right? 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
And, a lot of people, when the Yankees do things like try to get under the luxury tax, people invoke, "Oh, if George was here, he wouldn't do that." And I'm like, again, I think the Yankees have got kind of lucky. I think Hal has been a really good steward of the team. I understand the team hasn't won championships since 2009. There's a kind of greed for it here. And I think, again, one of the things that's forgotten is when people think of George, they think of the dynasty or they think of the Reggie years. But that bookend, no winning in the 1980s, the team becoming a complete eyesore in the early 1990s, to the point where we're used to now for 2.5 decades, this is a destination place where the best players want to play. The best players were staying away in the early 1990s. There's a reality and the myth.
Right.
And I do think part of the myth, I don't think it's a myth. I think George ached to win. I do think his methods oftentimes did not lead to winning. They were antithetical to winning, and he couldn't get out of his own way sometimes because of, passion or ego or fury or all the things that were the fuel of his life.
One of the things, though, when you just said that, that people say, well, George wouldn't have done this. I don't think it's possible to predict what George would have done. I think George was proactive. He was way ahead of people on all kinds of things. So, people now actually are reactive. George was not. George was proactive. And I think anybody that says, well, George wouldn't have done this, you have no idea what George would have done, because you could never predict George. That was part of the beauty and the larger-than-life thing about George. You could not predict what he would do.
Well, again, I go back to what I said. It's like, on most teams, including, by the way, the modern Yankees, 2 + 2 = 4, right? At the trade deadline, when the Yankees need a starting pitcher, I'm not looking at, who's the designated hitter they could add, anymore. Like, they're very logical now. That was, George was mercurial, as you said. He was impetuous. It was like he was easily influenced by certain people and certain moments. You know the kitchen cabinet of people.
Yep.
Jerry Reinsdorf and Tom Rich, the agent. If those guys carried outsized influence with him, and if they caught him at the right moment and it made sense to George at that moment, suddenly the Yankees were doing it. And, if you cover it was a lot more fascinating to cover George's team the modern team, even though the modern team is very logical and you could kind of follow along with it.
Well, there was so much interest. Every day there was going to be something else. And, you know, during the 70s, that whole group, I mean, he was larger than life and they were larger than life. I mean, who was more larger than life than that 70s teams with Reggie and Thurman and Goose and Guidry and, you know, and even Willie and all those people? Who's, I mean, every one of them, they fit that personality. And I think, you know, today's player is a little different. Are we ever going to see his like again, or are those days really gone?
Well, I mean, I think it would be fascinating to see what George Steinbrenner in the age of social media, in the age of Twitter, would look like, where you would call him an American ship on your cell and he would pick up, and within 30 seconds what he said is now being broadcast to the world instead of on the back page of the New York Post or the Daily News the next day. So I just think the spontaneity of news and the rise of the power of the athlete. You know, the athlete now is very powerful and isn't going to take the kind of stuff that was taken in the past. I mean, Susan, we're both there. Like this is one of those stories I tell people and they're like, nah, right? But we were there. We saw it. We understand it. We're watching a spring training game in what then was Legends Field, is now named for George Steinbrenner Field, and Hideki Arabu doesn't cover first base twice. In a spring training game, it's getaway day. They got to fly, I believe, to Los Angeles.
Yep.
To play the begin. They're going to play the end of their spring training out there.
Against the Dodgers, yep.
And you can see the owner's box. If you're sitting in the press box at Steinbrenner, at Legends, you can see the owner's box. And you see him pacing and steaming and pacing and steaming. And, you know, you were constantly on George watch. Think about that. We would have people assigned to follow George because you never know what he would say at any point. And it would be a buried moment if you were a tabloid guy, if they had, the competition had what you didn't. And George went down to the clubhouse. We weren't allowed down at that point. But when we came down, George came busting out of the clubhouse, headed down the narrow corridor towards the elevator. And he went in and he went in there like he's moving much too fast for everyone. And if you remember, if you were part of the group, I was the one. I got ahead of the group.
Yep.
And as the elevator was closing, I stuck my foot in. It popped the door back open. And I said, you know, it was not my greatest, you know, Mike Wallace question moment. I just did I asked the question I hate, which is the what do you think question. I said, what do you think of Arabu? And that's when he called him a fat pussy toad. And, you know, think about it. He called another human being, a guy he had courted to come to New York, a fat pussy toad. That was the owner. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, you can, but, like, players are going to stop coming. The Players Association is going to file a grievance. And then, of course, I mean, for me personally, the most fun about fat pussy toad is, if you think about it, how do you write the word pussy in a newspaper?
That was just what I was thinking of. Gosh, do I remember that. And we sat in that clubhouse because the plane was supposed to take off, and I was on that charter to Los Angeles. We just sat there.
We probably sat for like 6 to 8 hours to the point because they couldn't convince Arabu to get on the plane. So like all the writers, including me, we had to go upstairs to the press box and bring the laptop down into the clubhouse, writing the column, just waiting for what was going to happen coming out of Torrey's office. I remember Chili Davis, I believe, and David Cohn bought pizza for
David
everybody.
Cohn bought pizza. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was a different time. In some ways, I mean, I'm so glad that was my experience. I like watch what we're going through now covering teams. And by the way, it's not the subject for today. I'm sad about what covering teams is going to look like in the future out of this.
Me too.
I'm not sure we're ever getting back in a clubhouse again where the stories are and where
you
can comfortably talk to people. But the access used to be great. People used to be honest. Now everybody is coached up on what to say and how to say it. So when you ask, will we ever see George again? Will we ever see any of it again? Something approaching honesty and like how you really feel, or are you just going to tell me what the media relations, media strategy guru told you to say in the most vanilla way possible, and then everybody will do that, especially if I don't get to form a relationship with you by having clubhouse time?
Well, Joel, and I'm with you. I agree with that, and I'm glad that we were there to cover all this. And to me, his like will never be seen again. And you know, every time I'm Yankees, I miss him every day because you know that you know what he say. I do wonder about all those things. And I thank you for this time. We spent a lot of time here. I knew you'd be great because you know people should know what this was all like. So Joel Sherman of the New York Post and MLB Network. I thank you, my friend. I'll see you someday on a Zoom or something. I don't know.
I hope it's at a ballpark sometime soon, Susan, and always for you. Thanks.
Okay, Joel. Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.